And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 1st, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, 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 good. So last week was, as we say, it was a big week. We saw Greta Thunberg at the UN. There was other stuff going on at the United Nations. There were several interesting reports that came out of the United Nations last week. And I thought it might be a useful discussion to think about those things. So let's just set this up. There was a United Nations summit in New York last week, and it had to do with the Paris Accord. Strangely enough. Now, for those of you with short memories, Paris Accord was signed in December of 2015, of course, in Paris. And it was the first global climate treaty that seemed that actually went into effect. Turns out that it's a treaty, yes, it's a treaty, but the magic, the secret sauce for the Paris Accord was that instead of setting binding carbon emission reductions for different nations, what the United Nations did was to ask everyone to come and pledge to reduce their carbon emission by whatever amount that they wanted to pledge that they were going to reduce their own carbon emission by 2030 by X amount. And the United Nations then took all that stuff, put it in a bucket and said, okay, here's our treaty. This is the Paris Accord. But the other side of the Paris Accord is that it is a process. The Paris Accord is an ongoing process by which all the nations of the world will return every 5 years. And the buzzword that they use is that they will increase their ambition, that every 5 years countries will come back and say how much more, what they've learned, how they're going to cut their carbon emissions even more. Everything's voluntary, but it's what people volunteer to do. And that whole thing was set up under the idea that as we began to cut carbon, we'd learn things and people would be more enthusiastic, their ambition would increase, and blah, blah, blah. So the Paris Accord is a process more than anything else. And here in 2019, we are now in preparation for the first 5 year period to end. So next year in 2020, different nations around the world will have to come back with, we hope they will come back with increased ambition. That is to say, they're going to increase their pledges to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, and that's how we're going to save the world. Right, Mariah, does that make sense, or is that complete
gibberish?
Yeah,
right. They're called the ratcheting mechanisms, or they're also called the ambition mechanisms, and they're I think they relate to each country's nationally determined contributions, mm-hmm. because when they were set in 2015, it was clear that they were not going to get us to under 1.5. But just to keep it sort of manageable, it was like, okay, let's start here, and let's every year we're just going to keep increasing this commitment so that we stay under 1.5.
And it seems like that's the criticism of the Paris Accord that you hear from the people across the aisle saying, oh, well, it doesn't solve anything. It doesn't do anything. The Paris Accord, you know, all the commitments will only reduce a tiny amount, which is true, right? But that criticism of the Paris Accord ignores the fact that there is a continuing process for improving those commitments, right?
Well, and I think the other criticism it gets is that none of this is binding, right? It's not, you know, this is all voluntary. No countries are bound to this. There's no consequence if you don't meet it. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of what happened, what we ran into at this UN mm-hmm. Climate Action Summit, was that there were some countries who just didn't show up.
And we live in one of those, right?
Yeah, well, we eventually showed up, but not really.
I mean,
go ahead. Well, I think that, you know, they sort of gave, they said that people were given a spot at the table if they thought they would contribute meaningfully to the conversation, and the United States was not even invited.
Right, right.
They were not even given a spot at the table. I mean, they were invited to the summit, but not to be a speaker.
That's, I mean, and that, of course, a painful memory for all climate activists is when the current occupant of the White House pulled us out, well, attempted to pull us out of the Paris Accord. Now, there's a funny little backstory there you're probably aware of, but because the Obama administration was clever enough to require that any withdrawal from the Paris Accord take at least 4 years. So there's some hope that when after the next election, if a more climate-friendly candidate is elected, that she might put us back into the Paris Accord. So there you go. So that whole story. But long
Was
and short of it.
that I didn't that's interesting. I didn't know if that came from Obama or if it came from the UN, but you think it was
Oh no! It
that
was
little
Kerry and
Obama set
Obama who
that up.
knew that if somebody else get in, that they could. So there was some this sort of safety mechanism to try to allow the United States to have an election, and I believe that it's potential. There's a potential that the United States, yeah, that basically the next president could put us back into the Paris Accord.
Yeah,
So there's some hope
that's
there.
hope.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is that here in 2019, things are not looking too good. We need something like, I saw a headline that said, the countries of the world need to increase their ambition, the buzzword we've kind of talked about here. But basically, we need roughly a fivefold increase in the pledges of reductions. Right. So to talk about increases in reductions is a funny way to phrase it, but we have to reduce 5 times more than is currently pledged, and that's a tough one, right? Except if you push, each country, if the United States got back into the game, then that would be a different story because we could show leadership. But there you go. So
No,
Paris
but
Accord.
I mean, yeah, the three largest greenhouse gas emitters in the world, China, United States, and India, really didn't at this climate action summit didn't were not on board with. I mean, I think that China said that they'll sort of meet their targets, which are not sufficient. India talked about like maybe ratcheting up a little bit, but United States is doing nothing. India, or I guess India said it would meet the 2 degrees Celsius warming target, but not 1.5. And these three countries are responsible for the majority, a
Current
large
emissions, yeah.
percentage of the carbon emissions. And so to not have them on board is really a big problem.
Well, the report that I saw said that India has actually embraced it a little bit, and there's lots of solar panels, an explosion of solar panels in India. And so while they're not there, they're not perfect. Of course, I say this stuff saying that they're way ahead of the U.S. in terms of our recalcitrance. But India has had many, many solar panels installed and is doing, at least has some face-saving things to discuss at this Paris, I'm sorry, this UN conference.
Well, I mean, I think that to that point, it's not that these countries, us notwithstanding, but it's not that these countries are not doing remarkable things for renewable energy. It's just that they have these national determined contributions set in 2015. And while they are doing things to meet those contributions, they're not ratcheting the way that they need to. And they're not, so, if they do stick with those contributions, it won't be enough to keep Kiribati and,
Yes,
the Marshall Islands from going
exactly.
underwater.
And I think, I guess I'm not a UN expert, but my belief is that the actual commitments are due next year in 2020.
Right.
So that they're not, but what you're saying is they're not signaling any great increase in ambition right now, right? Everyone's kind of keeping their cards close to the vest. We can, yeah, we'll have to see next year where we are. But I mean that somewhat unhappy news is coupled with a report that came out that talked about the two things. One, this report, I'll put up links to both of them. One was called a Unified in Science, which was basically a report for this climate summit, talking about all different kinds of aspects of climate change, none of which were very impressive in the sense that we're not making the progress we need. And then there was a second report, which is also somewhat depressing. I guess there's a lot of depressing stuff here about the oceans. So if you remember back, just to put these most recent report in context, in October of 2018, we had the famous report that said we have 11 years to reduce carbon emissions by 45%. We have to get it all done by 2030. Right, that was a report. About a month, 6 weeks ago, there was a report from the United Nations that talks about the impact of climate change on land areas, which was dreadful. And then just this week is another report that talks about the impact of climate change on the oceans, which we'll see is dreadful. But basically, those are the three reports. What I read said that basically the IPCC is not going to release any more scientific studies until after the 2020 commitment period, and basically for us until after the 2020 election. So the IPCC goes quiet now after this most recent report on the oceans, and that report on the oceans was basically that the oceans are in trouble, that they're warming, they've absorbed something like 90% of the heat over the last X number of years, that they are becoming more acidic, holding less oxygen, which of course all has bad news for the marine ocean food chain, that all of the water systems of the planet are at risk, and things like hurricanes. We just saw the hurricane in the Bahamas that stayed over the Bahamas for 3 days.
In
That's going to
Puerto
become
Rico.
more common.
The tropical storm that just hit Puerto Rico too, right?
Tropical storm, right? And that the sea level rise is happening fast, 2.5 times faster in the last 10 years or so than it was in the previous century, and that we're looking potentially at something like almost 3 feet of sea level rise, which of course is catastrophic, right? Because
And
over.
it It also covers the cryosphere, right? The loss of ice in that
Loss
report,
of ice,
talking
yeah.
about talking about how the sea level rise is largely due to, but much of it is due to melting glaciers and ice sheets, and that the Antarctic ice sheet's annual ice losses have increased at least sixfold per year from 1979 to 1990, and
Yeah, I mean,
Sorry, yeah, so they've increased sixfold over the past couple of years, a couple de like decade or so.
right. And so these things, these sort of dire predictions for the year 2100, on the assumption we do nothing, or even within. So, I mean, again, there's all these. What these reports do, of course, is they make assumptions. And what you'll hear in the literature, and sometimes the deniers will use the word about different scenarios. So the United Nations has worked out, I think it's like nine different scenarios of how aggressively we cut back carbon, how much population grows, what the economic growth of the world will be, right? You have to make all assumptions about these things. And they project different kinds of carbon emissions based on those different scenarios. And they range from doing nothing and emitting as much carbon as we can, in which case we get these very dire predictions, down to the predictions of, the Paris Accord we take to heart, and we stay below 1.5 degrees centigrade temperature rise, we still see significant damage.
I don't think they have a Trump scenario,
Oh my
which is
God.
like
Yes, it's
worse
like
than
straight
doing
up in the
nothing,
air.
right? The rolling back some
Rolling
of the
back, yeah, going in
predictions.
the opposite direction.
Yeah, they need a Trump scenario.
Well, I think what we'll do is, I mean, I'll put up links to these reports. They will be used to spur further discussion. They're not happy reports, but we need to know about them. They're things that we have to face.
Here's some good news, so we can end on a high note. How about that?
Please.
70 countries. The one good thing that came from the Climate Action Summit is that there were countries that rose to the challenge. 70 countries plan to come up with tougher NDCs, nationally determined contributions, by 20 in 2020. So that was Norway, Argentina, Ethiopia, and Turkey. So hear, hear for some of those countries. That's
Absolutely. They
up from
can lead us.
23 countries before the summit.
That is good. That is good.
So there's
Hopefully, there
something.
will be a 25th By 2020, that is back in the lead, doing good things. Our own country, we need to make sure the United States
Somebody
gets back
first,
in the
yeah.
saddle, right? Well, thank you for that good news, Mariah. I certainly needed it. We'll
I
put
could
up
tell,
the,
Tim. I could tell.
we'll put up links to these depressing topics on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at the usual place. You can find us on all the podcast distribution apps at the usual places. You can listen to us on your smartphone. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. So we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.